This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from 500 Golf Center in Beaumont. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
What up, H-Town? And hey, how we doing? It is... What day is today, Patrick? Wednesday?
It is
Wednesday.
All day.
All day. I knew you were going to say that. Someone always does. Hump Day Wednesday. Pat, myself, blessed by the presence of Teflon John's right-hand man, Delvin Diesel, otherwise known as Del Olale. We always appreciate him going the marathon day today, hanging with us as we're going to have some fun for the next 3 hours. Got plenty to talk about. Astros got a win last night. Did it in pretty much the kind of fashion I'd like to see against a less than stellar team. Got Creighton off the hook for a day. Now they got a day game to wrap up the homestand and hopefully break even in a homestand that should have been easily winnable before they head back on the road. They got no help last night as well as the A's came back from down 3-1 to win. That sucks. The Rays came back against the Red Sox with a 4-spot in the ninth. They won. And so they still have a 2-game lead in the division, and they're still a little bit on the uphill climb as they try and re-secure best record in the American League. But we've got plenty of other things to talk about as well, so it's great that we got the crew together. Mr. Creighton, what is going on with you today? You feeling okay now?
I've been feeling okay. I don't feel like I got beat up so badly today. I feel much better. And we got lots of fun things to talk about today because your Houston Astros, well, the players that you've been most concerned about that were playing last night, they performed yesterday.
So they did their job.
They did their jobs. They did exactly what you wanted them to do.
They listened to me. Most people do.
Your Houston Rockets summer league team, where we had a matchup of number one and number two, and number two looked like number one.
I don't think there's any question about that.
So there's lots of good things to go on. And then, of course, there's, you know, Texans drama, which is very soap opera-ish and is probably the best that we can hope for when it comes to the Houston Texans. Because at least if it's just soap opera-ish, it's not something regarding somebody suffering a terrible injury or this player looks like absolute garbage at camp. We're just soap opera-y.
They're going to the motherland this weekend. I mean, that's something to talk about.
Is it the motherland?
It is, yes. Amongst America's dairy land, it is the promised land.
Oh, okay. I did not know that Green Bay qualified as the motherland.
Well, not necessarily Green Bay, because Green Bay is kind of a tough environment for certain people. But
yeah, anybody who doesn't like it cold.
Well, you know what? It's not cold all year long, but whatever the case may be.
10 months of the year?
At least I don't have to watch 2 games this weekend that I don't want to watch. I can watch one, and it's all encompassed in the same 4 quarters. I got to ask you, I asked you during the break, but your kids didn't start school yet.
No, my kids start school in a week. They go back on the 18th. They're both in the marching band, so they've been at school since, I think, July 27th, going 8 to 5. And then this week.
So one time at band camp?
No. One time at band camp. They're at the school.
But it's still band camp.
It's at the school.
But it's still band camp.
They're not away. It doesn't count.
You don't know that. They might sneak away.
I have a daughter and you have
she
two daughters.
She may sneak away one time at band camp.
You should never
I'm
use
just
that.
Saying.
Anyhow, this week they're all 1 to 9. So they're busy all day, which is good. I want them to be busy. Get out of the house. Sometimes during the summer, if you're not planning things to do, kids like to hide in their rooms and get on the Xbox and never be
at
seen again.
At band camp, they do too.
Fortunately, they both play large instruments.
Whoa! I can't because you're right. I have daughters.
There's
only so far I will go with that one. But the fact that you're telling me she plays large instruments. Okay. The reason I asked that. I'll follow up, get it off that topic a little bit.
Thank you.
So on the first day of school since they've been little, does the wife get overly excited too?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Because it's usually her first day of school also because she's a teacher.
Okay.
And it's you have to take 900 pictures.
Oh my God!
Before they leave for school, you've got to take pictures in the front yard, pictures in the backyard, pictures in the living room. Get to school, got to take more pictures. At least this year they both go to the same school again. But yeah, it's a production.
It's out of hand. One. So I already started getting, because the school has to do this, meet the teacher ahead of time a couple days earlier, and then they've got meet the significant people on campus day and do all this stuff leading up to. Oh my God. Like Lisa, because Lisa's on vacation this week only because she wants to be there for the girls when they go to school. She got up at 4:45 and she didn't have to, so that Taylor had everything ready so that they could take pictures between 6 and 7 because they wanted to put them on the news this morning. And then the minute Taylor heard that, she's got to have her picture on the news. Then it was like the whole family excursion to do the two separate schools for the two different kids. And you got to go, I mean, every single freaking parent comes out of the woodwork. Last year, maybe because of the pandemic, I never had a problem dropping the kids off, picking them up. The lines, the kids, the parents, the hallways, and the hallway, it's day one of the school, and it smells like an armpit. I'm like, isn't that supposed to be like in January?
It's because a lot of times during the summer, they don't have the air conditioners on. So good, the reason it starts to smell is they haven't had the ACs running, and the buildings just get really hot. So that's probably why the buildings smell a little funky today, is all the AC had to finally kick on. But yeah, first day of school is...
It's a big deal for females.
And here's another side of this, right? All summer long, we've been told, all right, no virtual academy, no virtual academy, no virtual academy. Everybody's going back to school. Well, now that COVID is, you know, ramping up and becoming, you know, a big deal again, and we've got the five biggest cities in Texas basically flipping off the governor over his no mask mandate.
Yeah.
School districts, like right now, are having votes to reinstitute virtual academy. So I'm in Katy. They just announced today that they're going to reopen virtual academy, which means all those monster lines that you were ready to get are probably going to be cut in half, because at least a third of the kids are going to go virtual.
I hope to God they go virtual as quick as they can, because I don't need to waste that much time in the car line every day. And to see, and just like walking the sidewalks, the crosswalks. Thank God I don't have to get out of the car every day, because the hallways were an unobliterated mess and people just standing there lost in your way. And I'm going, I just want to drop my kid off. And Lisa was like telling me all these stories, and she goes, well, you remember all the times your parents dropped you off, right? And I go, no.
When was that?
I really don't. I go, maybe the first day of kindergarten. Maybe. And our kindergarten and our grade school was pretty close to my house. But nonetheless, I don't remember a single time my mom took me to school. I just walked. Or I was dropped off.
And I guess this is the weird, probably, like, we always have, like, the image of, you know, your grandfather with, I walked to school. Both ways, uphill, in the snow, with no shoes on. And like when I was in high school, yeah, you walked to school. And if it was raining, get an umbrella, wear a coat. Like you weren't going to melt.
Yeah, we walked or rode our bikes. My high school was a couple miles away. Don't worry. Parents did not care if it was snowing. Or whatever. You just deal with it.
No, my parents didn't have a choice. Both my parents were gone for work when I was going to school. Like, my father was on the train at 6:05 in the morning. He was long gone. 5:30, he was out the door. You know, my mom left for work at 6:30. I started walking to school at 6:40. So, it wasn't like I was going to get a ride.
This is why it's a problem if they start trying to go virtual only. We rely on the school...
As babysitting
service. As babysitting as well. Yeah. It is childcare. That's the thing that concerns me the most. I get it if you want the choice. Go ahead. You deserve to have the choice. I totally get that. But don't just go back to virtual only, because that would be a complete screw job.
No, me. I don't think they'll go virtual only, but I think you're going to get the option if you want to go virtual, if you want to go in person. And like my kids go in person. My kids are both vaccinated. They wore masks all year last year. I don't know that they'll wear masks again this year, but if the school says you're wearing a mask, then they'll wear a mask.
Yeah, Taylor had to wear one this morning, so she did.
You know, if the school says this is what they want, then go with it. There's no need to rock the boat over that. My kids like to wear the gaiters. which they find to be more comfortable. You know, they're not like hanging on their ear or whatnot like that. So it doesn't bother them. They, you know, they pick out like designer gaiters that have whatever design on them that they like. And like the kids, like they talk about, oh, that's really cool. Where'd you get that? And it almost becomes like a fashion topic to talk about. If, hey, where did you get that? That looks really cool. I want to get one. And, you know, do you have one for your favorite team? Do you have one for your favorite show? Do you have one that's like wildlife or something like that? That's the stuff they like.
We don't do that. We just get masks. And then, like, Lisa, of course, again, puts more thought in it than I do. She gets, like, there's a package of them where they come in different colors. So then take and try and coordinate between what she's wearing and what mask she's wearing. But they're just the regular masks.
So you don't put any
we don't do the gaiters
thought into it.
No, let me tell you something. The thought that went into it also got to be an issue too. I found out this morning. So evidently the kids have to bring their own water bottles.
Yes,
and they finally cleared it so it doesn't have to be a disposable. You can bring your same water bottle. So now they make these water bottles for kids where it's like a kit, and you get the water bottle, and then you also get like these stickers that are really super sticking. When and you design the you can like bling up your water bottle. So I'm like, okay, cool. If she wants to do that, it also gets her some time to spend at the table doing something other than watching the iPad. Go knock yourself out. Well, now it's become a problem because she brought it up to Lisa. All her friends don't have them, but they want the sticky, shiny, jewelry things. And so Taylor's overly generous and starts peeling them off hers to give. I'm like, nah. We're done with that. We're just going to get the straight.
Your water bottle is bedazzled. Yeah,
just the straight water bottle, and that's it from now on.
Now, my kids take the big plastic water bottle, like the reusable one,
yeah,
and then they'll have like two disposables in their backpack. This way, if they burn out whatever's in their bottle, they've got more.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to get that out of the way, that at least in my house isn't the only house in which the freaking mom in the house it seems to get more excited than the kids do about first day of school. Lisa's up at 4:45 for freaking school this morning.
What time is she usually up?
Well, that's a different story.
Because like if she's usually up that early, to her it's not a big deal.
See, she was sick last week and then she was on she's on vacation this week. So she's really getting out of her schedule. Her schedule and her regiment, the first bell is at 1:45. She gets up at 2 and she leaves the house about 3:30, 3:45.
Man, that's the same thing like Nate Griffin does. He's like up at 2 in the morning. Yeah. And I said, I'm like, dude, I can't. There is no way I could ever possibly do 2 a.m. on a regular basis at this age.
It's
not happening.
It's a lot. I give her credit for doing what she does the way she does it every single day. So she's had a little break. She's going to be back at it. But I wanted to throw that out and ask you with kids. Dell, I'd ask you, but I know that, you know, you don't have to deal with that because you don't have the offspring.
That you know of.
You keep praying for that, but I think at some point it's coming, Dell. Whether you like it or not, you're going to slide one through the five hole, and you're going to be a daddy. Whether the Cougars' abilities to bear children or not, doesn't matter. It's going to happen.
Five hole. He's beating Mike Richter.
Or Billy Buckner.
Just Henrik Lundqvist.
Just depends on the path of the ball, Dell. Dell is not talking today, so we'll see how long we can try and make that last or get him to speak to us. But you guys can speak to us, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line where you can call and text. Otherwise, Twitch and Twitter, we are available. The Twitch line is open because the people are gathering now as we speak. So lots to get to, as Patrick mentioned, between Summer League basketball, Astros baseball, and again today a matinee game before they skip town. They're going to finish up their series with the Rockies with Framber Valdez on the hill. So lots of opportunities for you guys to get in on the conversation. Always glad to have you be a part of the press box. We'll take a quick break. Come back and get the whole party started in full in just mere minutes right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. Our new era is about to begin. Join us for the next chapter.
Do you want to take a leap of faith? To the age of the
new revolution. New voices, new shows, more passion and coverage of the teams you care about.
Deep to left field. You've got to be kidding me. Altuve's done it again.
The next chapter begins Monday, August 16th on the independent voice for Houston sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hi, baby, do you wanna be? This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
You heard the man with the good pipes as he brings us back in. Dell's behind the glass. We're talking about a whole lot of things, Houston sports, last night, today, and otherwise, as the Astros are underway against the Rockies. Do you want to go baseball from last night, or do you want to go basketball from last night, Patrick? Because I was flipping back and forth.
Let's start with your Houston Astros.
Okay. Odorizzi, concerning that he only went five innings?
No, because that's what Odorizzi is. Odorizzi is a five-inning pitcher. He gave you five innings. He gave you a good five innings, and that is essentially what you signed up for the day you signed him. He has been a five-inning pitcher his entire career. You now have the bullpen capable of giving you four innings when Jake Odorizzi pitches. So he gave you five shutout innings. As far as if you're the Astros, he did his job.
Okay. I hear you. But basically, when you look at what you need for the in the playoffs, if he's going to be in the mix, again, as a starter, he's going to have to give you more than five.
He can't give you more than five.
Why do you say he can't?
Because he's got a career track record of can't give you more than five. And if you look at his career, you look at all his numbers, he is a five-inning pitcher. This has never deviated any season. You have seen this year, every time they try to push him
into the sixth,
that's when all of a sudden he can't get it done anymore. He can give you five innings. At that point, if you push him further than that, forget throwing dice. You're lighting matches.
He's a starter that threw 81 pitches last night, and you're telling me that's enough.
That's what he can give you.
Starters are supposed to broach the 100-pitch mark.
It doesn't matter what your idea of what a starter should be. This is who he is.
At the money he's getting.
He's not getting that much money. But
he's getting 13 a year?
I don't think it's that much. But the point is, they signed him knowing what he was. And he's always been a five-inning pitcher. If he goes out and gives you five innings and no runs, you take it and you get out of Dodge. Because he's not going to get you through more. He's making $6 million this year, $5 million next year, $6.5 million on a player option the following year, and they gave him a $6 million signing bonus. Correct. So he's not making a whole lot of money. He's making fourth, fifth starter money.
That's fine. I'm okay with it then. I was just curious because at 81 pitches, I thought I know that when the wheels fall off, they don't kind of just get loose and then finally just go everywhere. They just come barreling off of the axle right away. But he was cruising, and they weren't that long of an inning offensively when the Astros were hitting. 81 pitches, I thought I'd throw him out there for at least one more.
Now, again, you would think, okay, he threw 81 pitches. He should have some more in the tank.
Yeah.
But as history says, those last 19 pitches are not going to be good. And this is for a guy who his last four starts was lousy, lousy, and brutal. So that he gave you five innings and didn't give up a run, three hits, two walks, three strikeouts. That's a good inning for Jake Odorizzi. That's a good outing for Jake Odorizzi, especially considering what he's given you, over his last four starts. But that's what you're going to get. When you go into the sixth inning with Jake Odorizzi, he's given up runs.
How much?
Guaranteed.
And I want to give Richard on Twitch credit for this, as great minds think alike for once. But I was going to ask you the impact of Maldonado. Because that last night was the first time all season Maldonado caught Odorizzi. We say it all the time. Whatever he gives you offensively is a bonus, but he is one hell of a backstop back there, and he manages pitchers really well. I think he gets some credit last night for keeping Jake's head in the game. And the one thing that we've been talking that was prevalent about Odorizzi recently was the long ball. There were no long balls. He threw five scoreless innings. As good as he was, he did leave a couple in the zone. Some of his stuff was up. He got away with them. But I think that I'm definitely more than willing, and maybe more than most, but I'm giving Maldonado some credit for last night.
Now, Odorizzi doesn't throw particularly hard.
No, he had a little pop last night.
But he throws the fastball very high in the zone and above the zone. And when he gets in trouble, that ball's not high enough. And when it's top of the zone but not high enough, it usually goes 400 feet. He had it at the very edge of the zone and above the zone. And every time the Rockies took swings on it, they were popping it up and fouling it back. And they didn't really barrel those balls up. And that was a big difference. And look, the reason why Maldonado was asked by the Astros last year, hey, we need you to drop some weight. We need you to be able to, you know, we're going to play 60 games. We need you to catch at least 45 of them. We need you to be behind the plate as often as possible because we're going to throw a lot of young guys and they need you. So the idea of, you know, is there some correlation between Machete being behind the plate and Odorizzi pitching well? Probably.
I think so.
Because that's why he's here. You know, Maldonado was a big part of the progression of so many young pitchers last year. He is a whiz defensively, but he's also great with working with each pitcher, knowing their strengths, and working them through games. And Maldonado, the fact that I didn't realize that's the first time he caught Odorizzi this year, that's insane to me. That is the first time he has caught Odorizzi this year, considering Maldonado catches like 4 out of every 5 games.
But look at the results. And Castro had gotten some games behind the plate between getting off the road trip, the last game of the road trip, coming back when Maldi was playing first base. So we got some in. But I think that there's credit to be given to Maldi there, and I think even extra credit when people start really having to realize how effective he is behind the plate, what he means to this pitching staff. So that's a big key. The other thing, I don't think that I've ever said one time when we were talking about the center field position, did I ever say that I was worried, concerned, or bothered by Chaz in center field?
No,
that's who I want.
Your concern was, why is Kyle Tucker playing center field? It should either be Chaz McCormick or Jake Myers. If you brought Jake Myers up and he was playing so well, you and I were in lockstep on this. If you bring up Myers, you might as well play him. If you're not going to play him, send him back. Bring up somebody who's more of a fourth, fifth outfielder. Play Chaz in center field. Shut up. Move on. And Chaz got into the lineup. Chaz, by the way, averaged up to 257 after a pair of hits yesterday, including his 10th double of the season. Chaz, look, this is now whether it's Dusty's call or it's the front office's call, whoever's call it is. As soon as they traded Miles Straw, it had to be Chaz or Myers. It had to be one of those two. And right now, finally, for those of us with high blood pressure, every time we watch somebody not named McCormick or Myers in center field, McCormick is in center field. In center field again today, Jake Myers getting his first start playing right field as Kyle Tucker gets the day off. But you know what, Kyle? And in fact, today's outfield is McCormick in center, Myers in right, Yordan in left.
Well, they're going to have to cover some extra ground because you know he doesn't have a fifth gear.
So, interesting stat that I saw today regarding Yordan Alvarez, and that is Yordan, as the DH, has hit 10 homers. Yordan, as the left fielder, has hit 12 homers, and he doesn't play left field very often.
Right.
It's almost like Yordan in left is more engaged in the game.
He is, but it's only a two-home run difference.
Right,
but I get it.
It's
less
a
games.
Ton of at-bats.
I get it. Less games than at-bats. But at the same time, I look at this, and I said from the very get-go, if you're going to trade Miles Straw, you're not going to give me someone in return, which is what I was waiting for. The McTaggart tweets we talked about yesterday that really kind of brought some light to it, that management and upper management and the analytics department, I would think, wanted to see more Chaz in center. Dusty wasn't having it, so they just decided, well, if you're not going to do it the easy way, we'll make it hard for you because we're going to trade Miles Straw. Now you're going to see Chaz. I don't need to see the Jakester in center field. I mean, I said the experiment's over because you're not a team that's just scuffling to get through the rest of the games on the schedule, or you're just maybe lucking out for a playoff spot and seeing if you got someone for the future. You have a team that right now, every game, every win's important. So I'm fine with, and especially because, like you said, Chaz is really seeing the ball well right now. He's making contact, got a couple of knocks again last night. Chaz is your center fielder. That's it. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm leaving it. That's where we're going. And that's it. So if you want to send Myers back down to Sugarland so he gets more at-bats, that's fine. There is a concern with who's the backup outfielder.
at that, but you're talking about your fifth outfielder. So, you know, you can go bring up whatever fifth outfielder you want. If you want to bring up Jose Siri, he can play all three outfield spots. He's got power. He's got speed. He's a strikeout a lot, but he's got power and speed. He can go fetch. So, and that guy is, he got off to a torrid start this year and then, of course, cooled off. But the idea of, you know, you've got a guy that, you know, might be considered a prospect in your system, and he's hitting the snot out of the ball, and you call him up to sit him, there's not a whole lot of logic in that.
No, there's not. That's why I'm saying. I mean, look, this team, like I said, it's too good to be experimenting now. The time for experimentation with running younger players into the lineup and seeing what they got, that's early in the year. But right now, because of what's happened, especially particularly in the last couple of days alone, when the six-game lead against the A's slipped to two, when they didn't have the best record in the American League anymore, that's when you started to be a little bit more concerned and pay more attention on a game-by-game basis. That's why, as we talked about yesterday, I have a little more clarity as to why, maybe, but I don't need to see Myers in center field anymore. If you want to give people a day off, that's fine. But if it's stunting his growth and development, and he's not going to be what he's been in AAA, I'm also fine letting him go back to Sugarland and take your knocks, because you're assuming that Bregman's going to be back. Then Diaz can actually play the outfield as well. Then you actually add another possibility in the outfield, and you don't have to worry about it as much.
I had the stat backwards, so let me fix it. As DH, in 70 games, 276 at-bats, Yordan, 12 homers. As the left fielder, in 24 games and 83 at-bats.
Wow.
10 homers.
That's an impactful stat right there. All right, so there's that information for you. Unfortunately, Fromber doesn't look like he's got everything figured out yet. Another rough first inning, spots a run to the Rockies and leaves the bases full before he gets out of it. So the Astros already going to be digging out of a hole, down 1-0 before they take their first at-bat, as they will come up here in a little bit. But we're coming up on the break point in the show after the first half hour. As we continue to roll forward, we'll step away for a few minutes. When we come back, we'll start talking about the Rockets Summer League. We'll get you up to date, if you missed it last night, on the number one pick in the draft versus the number two pick in the draft. And it looks like the Rockets, regardless of who was picked when, the Rockets got their pick right. And that's all that really matters. So stay right where you got it. It's the Press Box at ESPN.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Hey guys, I want to tell you right now about Frankie's Italian Kitchen. If you live in the West Katy, Fulshear, Richmond area and you're looking for authentic Italian food, only one place to go. The owner is Chris Smith. The name of the place is Frankie's Italian Kitchen. They've got pizza with an unbelievable pizza oven. But more so than that, they've got made-from-scratch Italian meals in a family environment with affordable prices. That's all you're really looking for when you want to get out and about. You don't want to get all dressed up. You don't want to worry about being starched with high prices and not that big of the portions. It's fresh, made-to-order. I mean, it's unbelievable stuff. You talk about lasagna. You talk about spaghetti, beef stroganoff. All the different Italian dishes. They also have fantastic wings and lots of other things. But the main thing is you're going to go back again and again because it tastes like true, authentic Italian food. It's all fresh ingredients. And the fact that it's made right there by the owner, Chris Smith, in his kitchen, so that you guys in a family environment can spread out, have some fun, and really feel full when you leave. Check them out at Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. They're open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 9, Sunday, noon to 8. Dine in, takeout, catering. Tell them I sent you by. You're going to be glad you went in there, and you will be back again and again. If it's a true Italian feast you're looking for, it's Frankie's Italian Kitchen.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Well, Michael Brantley keeps hitting. Another knock for the American League leader in batting average. Michael Brantley is a stick.
This is classic hitting here. Comes inside with the breaking ball. Brantley inside out swing against the shift. So he goes the opposite way of the shift for the easy knock. That is old school hitting.
But he does it better than most. Let's put it that way. So it's always good to have Uncle Mike getting the game started the right way, as we'll keep you updated on the Astros. Last night, if you were watching the Astros in the 5-0 victory, you may have missed it, but it was billed across NBA circles, basketball folks, and ESPN as the number one pick in the draft versus the number two pick of the draft, as Cade Cunningham and the Pistons took on Jalen Green and your Houston Rockets. Boy, I'll tell you what. And again, we haven't even seen the fourth of the four first-round picks yet. But the game that I watched last night, Rosetta Stone is going to get more and more credit from me. They got the draft right. Because even Josh Christopher, who I watched in college, who was a ball hog, who had blinders on, who just needed to get his own, that really didn't see his teammates or do anything positive, they told him he's going to have to play defense. He got up on Cunningham. And dare I say, with all the attention paid to number one versus number two, Şengün might have been the best player on the floor last night.
We talked about this from the day of the draft,
mm-hmm.
how we both thought the Rockets did a terrific job in the draft. Jalen Green, we both thought was going to be a star, and here he is, you know, hitting three triples, 6 of 11, 25 points, and 5 boards. And Green was unhappy with his performance because he turned it over 4 times. That's what stuck out to him.
3 of them, I think, were in the first quarter early on. He dribbled one off of his heel. He was trying to do too much.
Şengün absolutely dominated the paint, 21-8, and he had 4 blocks. And the thing that I like about him the most is he's not a big, stiff guy in the middle. He's very fluid. He's very athletic. He has excellent footwork. He hops off one foot back onto the other foot. How you'd be ambidextrous with both hands. Well, he does it with his legs. He can hop off both feet. He was probably the best player, the most consistent player, the most impactful player on the floor last night. And then Christopher shot 50% from the field, 15.7 assists, and he was up in Cade Cunningham's grill. And I'm not trying to take away from Cade Cunningham. I think Cade Cunningham's going to be a terrific player. But the Rockets, 3 of their 4 first-round picks, the other who may have been on a plane coming here now that he's gotten his buyout from Real Madrid, all 3 of the Rockets' first-round picks that are playing really well. And I get the whole, hey, it's summer league, you know, let's not get too excited. Nah, BS. You know what? You're a Rockets fan. You haven't had anything to be excited about for a freaking year. Be excited. I don't mean be excited we're winning a championship tomorrow. Be excited. You've got hope. You've got 3 young players that have a lot of promise. You've got 2, not just 1. You've got 2 that might be legitimate stars in this league. Be excited. Be happy. Be freaking excited that your team kicked Detroit's ass. I don't care, it's summer league. They kicked ass. And your 3 kids, they played great. You got better action in this summer league than you did for the last 4 months of the season. So go be excited. I don't have a problem with it.
No, I think it gives Rockets fans hope. Because now, like I said, you drafted 4 19-year-olds, and 3 of them look like, and there's no reason to believe the fourth can't play. He's more of a defensive specialist. But you got 4 kids that you can really watch develop, and you add them to Jayshon Tate, and you add them to Kevin Porter Jr., and you add them to Martin Jr., and you're like, you know what? They got a nucleus that for the next 5-7 years are going to be fun to watch because they play fast. They play above the rim. They have offensive skill sets that are going to be conducive to, as a viewer, really being entertained by the brand of basketball that they're playing. And so everybody's trying to say, you know, who's going to be rookie of the year? Who cares? Guess what? Cade Cunningham, 1 year at Oklahoma State, was more of a kind of a system player. He's going to fit into a system. He's going to still do his things and get his points. But just watching Jalen Green, the kid has the ability to be special. He's got the hops, the athleticism, the fact that he pulls those threes with more than one guy contesting the shot and still finds a way to knock him down. This kid, the big problem I have, Pat, right now is a couple to what you said. One, it's just summer league. So you're not playing a bunch of against the majority of these guys that are going to be on NBA rosters. So it's fun to be excited for now, but temper it and understand what it really is and really get excited if they're doing this against the teams in the NBA they're facing in the regular season. The other thing that I really see coming down the pike at some point is going to be there's going to have to be a conversation. The coaches may have to have some direction. Or there's going to have to be some kind of dialogue because I can see a certain point in which Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green both think they are the man. If they can coexist, They can figure it out. They can alternate who brings it up or what roles they're playing or whatever the case may be. Fantastic. But because they're a little immature, because of their age, and I don't know them as people, I can see down the road something you're going to have to address with that.
And that's probably going to be more on Porter than it is on Green. Green looks like he has a chance to be a legit star. He can get his own shot.
You don't think Porter does?
Not as good as Green.
Ooh, boy, Patrick.
I don't think Porter's as disagree. Good as Green. Green can get his shot from anywhere, anytime. Doesn't matter who's on him.
Ken Porter Jr., against a grown-ass man, had a 50-piece last year. Ken Porter Jr. in the summer league that he's been playing in against NBA talent is lighting it up. So I'm not as quick and easy as you are to just say, I can see it in Jalen Green. I don't think it's Kevin Porter Jr.
I'm not saying I don't think Kevin Jr. is a good player. I don't think he has the star ceiling that Green has.
Wow. I think people would disagree with you. I think that you look at the fact that, you don't want a Russell Westbrook KD situation down the line. If these two can coexist, I think you got your backcourt.
And honestly, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to coexist. Yes, they both like to have the ball in their hands, but I think they're both showing they're capable of being able to be a guy who gets his shot in other ways. So I think it's as long as, like you said, as long as the ego doesn't get involved and it's I have to be this guy and you have to be that guy, I don't see why they don't coexist. And you have a really good starting backcourt.
Well,
you could
say that about the Oklahoma City team, and they couldn't coexist. If they did, they probably would have one or more titles if they could have kept that group together when you had Ibaka, when you had Harden, when you had Russ, when you had KD. They had the Warriors down 3-1, and they were more worried about pissing and moaning at each other about who was Batman and who was Rodman, and they screwed the series over, and then KD skipped town to join a super team, as opposed to keeping the band together where they had enough talent. They had a team that you could have had for years with that kind of a success, and their egos wouldn't let them do it.
And this is why so many people in that area, they're so angry with KD, because they were up 3-1. KD was terrible in games 5 and 6. He was terrible. And then in the first half of game 7, it took him like a quarter to start really shooting the ball, almost like they were having that little tete-a-tete with him and Russ where KD was just like half checked out to start the game. And then he went and fled. So I don't blame people in Oklahoma City for not liking Kevin Durant for the way that he left, and considering that that collapse is on him as much as it is on anyone. Because he wasn't good games 5 and 6. He wasn't. But this, like I said, I think Jalen Green is going to be a big-time scorer. And, you know, to see him guarded by a guy who's bigger and longer than him, on the sideline, hitting a three off 1 foot and hitting it. You've got to be a special player to hit those kind of shots.
Oh, I mean, look, he has the ability. And if he starts figuring it out, and it may take some time. That's why I'm saying, don't put the horse before the cart. Don't start thinking playoffs this year. Okay, they're going to take their lumps. But they've got a nucleus now, and it's not just for three or four guys, two guys, here and there, a couple of guys. You've got a young 7 or 8 guys that you can watch. If they all don't pan out, so what? You have more than enough to build around now, and you've got some pieces that you can actually see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train coming to run your ass over. You can see that this team, if they just start accepting roles, if they start developing their craft, if they start, in the case of each of these kids, they play some defense, they develop their passing skills or where they might be lacking a little bit, this is a team in the next 3 to 5 years that's going to be reckoned with. And someone said it on text, and they probably are accurate. This has the makings of a young OKC team when they were putting the team together that I mentioned, with the kind of ability we've seen so far. Now, again, temper that by saying they still got to do it against NBA talent on a night-in, night-out basis. But so far, so good is what I would say.
I mean, look, if you're not getting it done in summer league, there's no reason to think you'll get it done during the regular season. So for right now, against the competition that they're playing, they're doing everything that you could hope that they're doing. And that's why you should have all the excitement in the world. And Joel, to your point about how many young guys they have and how many pan out. Well, Jayshon Tate's been a pretty good player.
Mm-hmm.
Porter's been a real nice surprise since they got him. Cam Martin Jr. has been a pretty good player. And now you add 4 more guys where Green and Şengün look like they can both be legit stars. And Christopher at least looks like he could be a rotational guy.
He's got a 48-inch vertical.
And which I believe is the record. Nobody ever had a 48-inch vertical before. So you have a guy who can, you know, high motor, go out and play defense, learn to shoot. Hell, he hit 50% of his shots yesterday. So you get that, and then, you know, with Usman Gbar coming in, if it's possible you hit on those four, and I think Green and Şengün are hits. Christopher looks like he could be at least be a rotational guy. If Gbar can at least be a rotational guy, you hit on every draft pick. To have four picks and hit on all of them, that's really freaking hard to do. Usually at least one will flame out or underperform or not be all that good or whatnot.
You don't need to,
seven young guys.
Then you got Amani Brooks, who can make some shots. You know, some of the kids that they've got that have been playing in the G League can make some shots. If they start putting some shooters in the mix as well, now again, you're seeing everybody that's playing their role, everybody that's doing the little things, as well as the guys are going to have to carry the load and put the team on their shoulders from time to time. I'm excited about what they're building, and it's, I know it's just been a small sample size, but where that draft could have gone, the things that could have happened wrong, I have to give credit to Rafael Stone and the basketball ops people because they got it right.
The best thing that they did was they were not going to make some foolish trade to move up to number one and give up a ton of assets. That was the best thing they did. The second best thing they did was they acquired Şengün. Because for where they got him in the draft, he looks like he could play.
No doubt. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. Lots more to get to. Hour number one, 3-hour program. Always includes you, 713-780-3776. You can call, you can text. You can also hit us up on Twitch and Twitter. If you do text, put your name on it so that we can give you some credit for your conversation and also speak to you directly. That's the way we like to do things around here. So we look forward to interacting with you along the way. Before we get to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Cars for Kids. Look, a lot of people, you know, whether you live out with some space in your backyard, and maybe you got a vehicle that's not working anymore, and it's just been sitting there, and it's gathering some dust and rust, and you don't want to do anything with it because you don't want to pay to have a tow truck take it away. You don't have to. It's really cool. It's the Cars for Kids program. You go to carsforkids.org. You find out that they come to you and they tow it away for you. They do all the paperwork. You mentioned ESPN 97.5. You're also in the process going to get a $50 gift card that you can use however you wish. It's our way of saying thank you for getting involved in the program. And then the program really takes shape because your donation is turned into resources that kids need when they're trying to get a second chance at an education. It all goes through the Houston Can Academies right here in the city. And then kids get a second chance at getting their diploma. It's a tax write-off as well. So it's not money coming out of your pocket. It's ways you're actually benefiting, profiting, and feeling good for your donation. And it could be a boat, a car, a motorcycle, a trailer, a truck, whatever the case may be, working or not. Even if you don't have the title for it, they'll take care of all those details and they'll thank you for your donation. I love this program and you will too, because these kids and the reaction that you see and the results that they get is all about developing these kids for the rest of their lives. Check them out today. It's a great program. It is, again, carsforkids.org or 713-225-4226. Right off the car, not the kid.
When it comes to sports betting, sportsmapbets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, sportsmapbets has all the info you need to make the best play. sportsmapbets.com. Monday, August 16th, we're writing the next chapter in Houston sports radio history.
You ready?
On the independent voice for Houston sports, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Let's do it.
My thumb, not from being nervous sometimes. I'm thinking God made me special here on purpose. So all the while till I'm gone, make my words important. So if I slip away, if I die today.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
One on, two out. Bottom of the second inning. Astros are already tied it up at one apiece, so it doesn't look like it's going to be a nightmare. At Minute Maid, Fromber seems to have settled down a little bit. So that is encouraging in itself. Hopefully he settles in and we get six or seven innings out of him and get a little bit more offense as Altuve comes to the plate, and hopefully they get the win to even this. That really, it is kind of, and you know that it was a hot button for me, but it would be, it does bother me that they're only going to get out of here if they win today with a split in the six games.
Obviously, the stuff against Minnesota didn't go the way they wanted. Some of that was self-inflicted. And when I know you look at it as self-inflicted as, you know, you're starting five starters as opposed to
and four Skeeters.
And, you know, then you've got, hey, we can't push the guy from second across in extra innings.
That was your issue.
That's an issue they've had since last year. And then they had a game where, look, Lance McCullers didn't have it. And then they brought in Maton relief, and Maton didn't have it. So you give up seven runs. It's tough to win when you give up seven runs to any team. So yeah, there were plenty of things you'd like to see them play better about. But they come back with a strong performance yesterday. And if we can get a good performance here against Sensatella, Antonio Sensatella is not that great a pitcher.
Santonio Sensatella.
He's...
forget about it.
You know what? High fours ERA. He's not a guy that you look at and say, all right, this guy's he's a tough pitcher. No, you had the tough pitcher last night with John Gray, and you got to him.
Boy, how about a kick save and a beauty that completely changed the complexion of that game? That's a routine double play ball last night that the Astros are hitting into. And because he kicks it, it turns into a base hit for Correa and opens the door for them to get a couple of runs on the board, and then they never look back.
Bad teams make bad mistakes. And, you know, like that is an underrated thing about the Astros is when they are healthy, how good they are defensively. Yuli is a very underrated defender at first base. He's a terrific first baseman. Altuve is over the yips and playing maybe some of the best second base he's played in a few years.
Was that last night the play he made behind second base from his knees?
And he's had a few of those, and all of a sudden, you know, you see him, he goes to the bounce throw a little more often, mm-hmm. but that's by design. I've seen a lot of guys do that. Ray Ordonez with the Mets, who was considered an elite defensive player, used to throw that one hop because it was easier for the first baseman to handle a normal hop that's designed than try to pick it out of the dirt or short hop it. If you know it's like a 5-foot hop, that's a predictable hop.
Well, the other thing is you get an extra little dart off the ball when it hits the ground and fires up that you're going to get a little more velocity on it because of that. Even Correa with the cannon he has does the same thing. When he goes deep into the hole, he throws it intentionally because he knows the skip is going to give it a little extra as it heads to first base.
And Correa is an elite defender. And Bregman is an above-average defender. So their infield defense, all the way around the horn, I don't know there's a team in baseball that all four positions is as solid as a unit defensively as the Astros are. And that's a big part of why the Astros are so successful. I mean, think about what they were back in 2013. They played lousy defense. They struck out a ton. It was home run or nothing. To what they are now, they hit for average, they draw walks, they get extra base hits, they hit for power, they play excellent defense. They are everything that they check all the boxes that you want almost for every player up and down the lineup until you get to like Machete.
Right.
Of guy hits for average, hits for power, draws walks, gets on base, plays great defense. Machete doesn't hit for average. But he hits for power, and he draws walks, and he gets on base, and he plays great defense.
Does he draw walks, though?
He actually does. His on base is almost 100 points higher than his average.
Well, but his average is extremely low.
It is, but if his average was 220, it would still be 100 points higher.
No, and I know, but here's the thing. I think, and I've said this before, I don't think he puts enough work into, he puts so much work into his defensive abilities and managing a pitching staff that I think sometimes there's some throwaway at-bats that are in there. And again, you don't look for him to do too much. And you just kind of you appreciate when you get one of those days when he does hit a long ball or he gets an extra base hit or maybe he gets a couple of knocks free at key times because that's not what he's in there for. But when the rest of the lineup is hitting and is putting together the kind of at-bats that they're starting to put together again because they're getting a more consistent lineup, that's the kind of action you like to see out of this team. And they're going to need to do that because they're in the middle of this dogfight with so many different teams for so many different reasons, starting with the A's in the division and then starting to watch the White Sox, the Red Sox, the Rays, and all the teams that are going to be fighting for those top records in the American League. Last night was just so disturbing. I kept watching behind the pitcher to see the scoreboard to see a four spot go up for Tampa Bay in the ninth inning after the Red Sox were leading most of that game and win that one. When you figure every time you get, you know, the Astros are going to win, the first thing I do is look at, are they gaining ground on anybody? Then the A's are down 3-1 and they come back and they win. And you're like, well, so you could have been a lot better.
You're
I'm scoreboard watching.
Torturing yourself, scoreboard watching.
But it's because I love this team.
Yeah, and yesterday, you think about how the offense got started. Chazzy Fizz, the base knock. Taylor Jones, the base knock.
Surprisingly, but
those
he's been good
two guys,
last couple
the
games.
Bottom of the order. Yep. They got things started, and then Brantley and Altuve, of course, look, you expect those guys are going to hit. And when the Astros get production out of the bottom of the order, they're damn near impossible to beat. When they're McCormick's and the Taylor Jones of the world are getting hits, it's tough to beat. That's where, you know, when we saw this against the Dodgers, right? That was how Kenley Jansen got out of the ninth inning after he gets the Kyle driver, is he's getting out a bunch of skeeters.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of teams were looking at it that way. Whether you were in the National League Park or not, you were looking at 7, 8, 9 going, it's like a pitcher's batting in all three positions, especially when Garcia was hitting because he was absolutely useless. And you kept looking at it from a defensive perspective, going from their dugout, they're going, 1 through 6, we'll worry about. We might even pitch around some guys because we know 7, 8, 9, we got no problems with.
Garcia is so bad at the plate. He literally could have had a better average if he just bunted every at bat.
Yeah.
Just bunt and bust it. I think he'd have done better doing that than actually taking swings.
Well, if you missed it, because we've been talking yesterday about the fact that the Astros have been dealing with some injuries, that's been unfortunate. Don't know what's going on around the rest of the league, but you know the teams that are starting to really become evident as competitors with the record situation, like the Chicago White Sox, they were getting a lot of players back. Now they're losing one. White Sox losing Cy Young candidate Carlos Rodon.
Oh.
10 days right now, left arm soreness. The All-Star is 9-5 with a 2.38 ERA and 19 starts. Could be out longer than the required 10 days. They're going to err on the side of caution, said Tony La Russa, and they're going to try to be optimistic. Well, considering what this team has been through with injuries this year in Houston, no one's feeling sorry for you. You got to just next man up.
Oh,
and we'll
listen,
see how it goes.
There is no apologies or flowers for anybody dealing with injuries. The Astros have dealt with just as many injuries as anybody. In fact, the two teams that I follow closest, the Astros and the Mets, both of them at times have been walking MASH units. The Mets are still a MASH unit. But the Astros have had every starter except Greinke has been on the IL at some point.
I think that's right.
We went through a week
and
a half.
Well, don't forget, he went on the IR, but going into the All-Star break,
he had bumped shoulder.
He had the shoulder issue that they cut his start short to give him more rest.
You had half the lineup out for COVID for a week and a half. And then, you know, Alvarez was back on the list. And then Yuli was back out. Bregman's been out. Basically, who hasn't been out is Correa. Well, Correa was out. He was sick for a couple of days. And Straw and McCormick. Like, they were the only guys. Brantley's been on the IL. Jordan's been out. Diaz missed a couple of months after he got hit the hand.
Altuve had the COVID issue.
So the Astros have had damn near everybody had to miss games either because of injury or COVID. And the bullpen, the entire bullpen had to be remade because all the young arms from last year that they thought were going to be productive this year are all injured. Except for like two, and they're just pitching really
well. Let's also consider the fact that we got to get to a break. But if you think the fact if Baez comes back and he can be effective, now maybe you don't have the starters required to go 6+ for it to be a good game for the Astros, and maybe the order easy 5-inning start is going to be just enough because now you've got a surplus of relief pitchers Dusty can go to and have confidence in that have had the experience that have the innings under their belt that can finish the job for you that you didn't have before the deadline.
Plus, if you need to have Odorizzi in the rotation going into the postseason, I would say 105% he's going to tandem with Christian Javier.
Yeah, sure.
And they might only go 3 or 4 innings with Odorizzi, depending on how he's going, and then do the tandem thing with Javier like they were doing with McCullers and Morton a couple of years ago in the playoffs, how they would tandem those two guys. You might see that because they've got to piece together whatever their rotation is going to be come the postseason, And one thing we've seen from this team over the last 4 years is there are various issues in the postseason every single year with, you know, spots 3 and 4 in the rotation, and they figure out a way to make it work.
Well, let's figure out to get into hour number two with a lot more to talk about and get you guys involved. 713-780-3776. Call, text. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch and Twitter. Patrick Dell and myself getting ready for hour number two. Keep it right where you got it. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.